Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back, hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning to you. My name is Lynette, here along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, taking your calls. Here's the number, 206-421-5757. And we're talking with Jim about diabetes and some of his medications.
Sure. So, Jim, Jardiance is one of the newer drugs to treat for diabetes, and it works by making your kidneys remove the extra sugar from the system, and therefore it lowers your glucose level. And therefore, when you lower your glucose level, you reduce risk for heart disease and so many other conditions. But like with all medications, it carries a lot of side effects. First of all, you mentioned the cost. So cost is a huge factor. Metformin also carries side effects. So in my practice, you know, I prefer to start with metformin because it's a cheaper drug. And where Jardiance is a newer drug, it can be used in people who do have borderline kidney problems. You have to be careful because sometimes it can also cause kidney problems if it causes too much dehydration. So you just have to weigh the pros and cons for each individual patient. Start with the drug that will cause the least side effects. Now, some people cannot tolerate metformin at all because it can cause significant diarrhea and loss of vitamins for them because they can't absorb nutrients. And so they prefer other drugs. And Jardiance doesn't cause the diarrhea.
Yeah, the big one of the big problems with metformin is it inhibits your ability to absorb B vitamins very efficiently.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be on metformin, you should also be on a good potent B vitamin supplementation.
Yeah, you have to. You have to be cognizant of the bowel issue and the loose stool that it can cause, especially as the dose is increasing. Mm-hmm. Both medications can help with a little bit of weight loss, but Jardiance has more weight loss reported in the literature than with metformin. And so they both have pros and cons. And I think, you know, you start with one drug and you see whether it works or not. And then you add a second one if you need it, if you've used the maximum doses of the first one.
Yeah, I've been on metformin for a while, for at least about 5 years. And then my blood sugars, the last few times that I did the test, were not coming down as the doctor wanted. So the last time I talked to them, they recommended Jardiance to see it will help.
Sure.
Yeah, so
that makes sense.
That's why they give it to me. And so I just wanted a little bit of reassurance about the Jardiance because I was reading the what there something about some serious side effects that I'm not familiar with, and so I just have to be aware of the side effects, and if it's affecting me, then I better let them know. But there's no danger then in taking it in addition to all the different type of medications that I'm taking. I mean, I'm looking at about 10 different stuff, you know, things that I'm taking. And this metoprolol and the Jardiance are new, and I don't know whether they will directly affect anything that I'm already taking, or if I have to ask my doctors to drop something, you know, to replace it with the new ones. Because if they keep adding this, very soon I'll be looking at a ton of stuff that I'm taking. So Is there a way that something can be taken off, or is it, does it make sense? I mean, I'm just
wondering. Taking medicines for a whole lot of different conditions.
Yeah, polypharmacy.
Okay? Yeah, your metformin is not for the same conditions that your
metoprolol is.
Metoprolol is. Metoprolol is usually used for things, blood pressure or atrial fibrillation or that sort of thing.
Right.
We'd have to know why your doctors had your had you on these, and so obviously we aren't going to change your medicines here on the radio.
Correct.
That's something you got to visit with your doctor.
So that when I see them, I have to see my primary care doctor.
Yes.
In a few weeks, so then I will ask them whether I want something taken off or not.
Yes. Have your drug list handy when you go in. Don't try to remember.
Yeah.
Have it written down so that you know what you're taking, what doses, how often, so that you can actually sit down with your doctor and discuss them one by one.
And that's a good question if you have multiple providers and they don't know what the other provider is giving you.
That's right. So every doctor should have a total list of your meds.
Yeah, I have a lot of providers, different providers. So, all right. Okay.
You asked me one question that always raises my hackles a bit. Okay. You made a quasi statement slash question when you said, so there are no risks with taking all of these drugs together. And my immediate answer when somebody says no risks, I say, no. I never said that. There are risks to every decision we make in medicine. You know, your doctor's job is not to give you things that have no risks. They don't exist. Mm. Your doctor's job is to give you as many benefits as they can, balanced against as few risks as practical. And there will always be risks. So, you know, that's something you just have to bear in mind, that human beings are not perfect. Your doctors are not perfect. The medications are not perfect. We always have to be watchful for complications and problems developing.
Okay.
All right. But thank you for the call.
Right.
I greatly appreciate your call.
Okay.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for that, Jim. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We are taking your calls at 206-421-5757. Give us a call about your symptoms, your diagnosis, your health. We want to help. That's why we're here every single Saturday live in the studio. We're headed to beautiful Bellevue, and Catherine is on the line with us. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, Catherine.
Hello. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yay.
Hey,
I have a question first. I want to make a comment, if I can, about your enthusiasm about changing the medical system or the government in our medical care. But I will do that at the end. Question I have is this. I want to give you a little bit of history. I see Dr. Gilbert now for over a year and a half for severe dry eyes. And I have severe nose, mouth, lips, everything. He's helped me with the dry mouth, the dry eyes.
Good.
You helped me with the dry lips that I've had for 2 years with your B-complex suggestion. And now what I have is, I have a little bit of a medical background. To me, I feel like I'm having a severe allergy attack.
Uh-oh.
But it's not the normal allergy attack. It's in my eyes. And he gives me, Dr. Gilbert gives me steroids to use for that. And that helps. But wherever that medicine goes in the drainage system, because he's blocked my tear ducts, wherever that goes, that system and those vessels are so dry. I have no nasal congestion. I have no pain. It's deep. It's behind my nose bridge and my eyes. My face gets very itchy. And the only place in my nose that gets itchy is on the very end. But it's crazy.
All right. And it sounds almost like we're asking for a Dr. Gilbert consult, too.
That's sick. No.
Dr. Gilbert cured the eyes. He doesn't do nose, I don't think.
No, he doesn't. But it's interesting in that the lacrimal drainage, the drainage from the eyes, is into the nose. And so,
so some of the drugs could be causing the dryness, and we don't know what she's getting.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, is that
no, it isn't in the nose. The nose and the nasal cavities, is the pain is coming deeper from the nose, deeper in the tract.
Because anything you put in your eyes is going to drain into your nose. And so if you're putting steroid drops into your eyes, you're putting steroid drops into your nose. Yeah, so it's...
Even though they're plugged.
Well, again, I don't know. Dr. Gilbert's the one who I can actually look and see how much plugging we got and how much drainage we've got. But it sounds like we need two different guys to weigh in on this. One would be Dr. Gilbert.
First, Dr. Gilbert, yeah.
And then perhaps an ENT guy to take a look
at. Well, she mentioned allergies too, right? Yeah. So I don't know.
No, I only mentioned allergies because I have had the normal allergy reaction. I'm allergic to dust. I'm allergic to, I have those. But this isn't that.
Okay. It just feels like it.
Yeah,
no.
Is
that what you were saying?
Feels like
I don't have any of that blowing the nose and all the secretion. I'm completely dry, overly dry.
Well, I know that Dr. Gilbert listens to this show a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Michael, if you're listening to the show...
And you're not out golfing or skiing or doing something
exciting. You're not out sunbathing or something, and you want to give us a call and weigh in on this lady, feel free. We will patch you right through as quickly as we hear you or see you.
Okay. Can I make another comment then?
Sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
You mentioned metformin and how much you love it. And I wanted to let you know I was part of the NASH study back Veterans Hospital, Veterans Medical Center did it, I don't know how many years, 15, 20 years ago. And I did get my metformin. And the only reason I got it was that, so I didn't really have blood sugar problems before, but it, like my, fasting was like, I think 90 or something, maybe 90, and it got it down to like 70.
Huh.
My liver damage was never from NASH. My liver damage was from medicine that I'd received, but they did the scan, and it showed, they didn't know what the cause of the damage, so that I qualified for the study.
Wow. Okay.
But so the thing I complained about it was, you know, where I gained the weight? In my belly.
In your belly.
Do you gain weight in your belly?
Yeah.
Huh.
While on metformin?
That's interesting.
Yeah,
because metformin usually helps to
lose weight.
I know,
effect. Yeah.
I just think,
And she got NASH at some time as well.
They also did. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt. They also did studies of the fatty acids. You know the mid, the cholesterol, the mid. I have the mid range cholesterol. What am I trying to say? Do you know what I'm trying to say? The small cell.
You know what? Catherine, would you hold on just a moment? We're going to take our quick break, and we'll be right back, all right?
We can't hear you.
Okay, we'll be right back.
I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me excitations. I'm picking up
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine, and we love talking with you on the show with your questions and your concerns. Each week, I'm Lynette, Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and Dr. Samira Umat, and the phone number is 206-421-5757. And we want Catherine to stay on the line. We're talking with her right now, and we also have Dr. Michael Gilbert calling in just a moment as well, so we can ask him about some of those things.
Okay. It'd be nice to get Dr. Gilbert's input here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. While we're waiting for that call, do we want to continue with Catherine?
Sure.
Okay. Catherine, your last little discussion, you were kind of faint. We were having difficulty hearing you. So get the phone right up to your mouth and talk to us clearly so that we we can understand exactly what your concerns are, okay?
Yeah.
We don't want to ignore them. We just want to, we have to hear them, though.
Oh, I was just making a comment about metformin and that I got randomized to get it in the NASH study that veterans did it here in Seattle. I think it was a national study, but veterans ran it.
Okay.
And that the metformin actually caused me to gain weight in my belly. But all right. I gain weight. I have, that's where I carry all my life. I carry weight in my belly. It's superficial. Yeah. I don't know why fat, excuse me, yeah. weight, not weight, but fat.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's an issue. You're on a drug that usually has one effect and you get an idiosyncratic reaction is what we call that. When somebody
right,
gets a
right.
reaction that's the opposite of what usually happens.
Right, right.
You know,
but it was interesting that study also did medium chain triglycerides, small chain, and large chain. And I hadn't heard much talk about that. And this is, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I don't remember when it was exactly, how old I was. But I have a lot of medium chain, from what I understand, that's good.
Okay.
Well, triglycerides typically are related to carbohydrate intake. And in the big picture of heart disease with plaque buildup, they play a smaller role than low-density lipoprotein and high-density lipoproteins. And therefore, we talk more about the low-density lipoprotein because they're dangerous. And it's not just that that's dangerous. The oxidized version of that is dangerous. And if you have a lot of LDLP and the small LDL particles, then that is even more dangerous. So that's why we don't talk about triglycerides as much. We don't, it really isn't that big a role player in cardiovascular disease as much as LDL and HDL and the relationship between total cholesterol and HDL. That is more important. Like, for example, even VLDLs, they don't play such a role in that risk profiling. Two other factors that do play a role are apolipoprotein B, and you mentioned NASH, and that is important to know because as it's rising, it is a marker for risk for developing NASH. And for those that don't know, NASH is just an acronym for non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is just inflammation in the liver, which is not caused by alcohol. Because normally, whenever we see that, it, you know, it's always alcohol is the big culprit, but we recognize that fatty liver is caused by other things, so we named changed the name to NASH. And then the other markers that we look for are genetic carriers and traits, and also whether the plaque itself is at risk for rupture. And herein, we look for myeloperoxidase as an enzyme that increases, telling us that the risk for rupture of the plaque is present. And lipoprotein PLA2, that's another enzyme that increases if the plaque is about to rupture. So we're looking at different things and also risk profiling. So these are better markers for risk stratification than just the triglyceride and which form of the triglyceride it is. And it's easier to do in the labs, and regular labs can easily do this. Like, for example, Cleveland Heart Lab can do it. Even LabCorp can do a version of this test. And it's
great.
Cheaper.
I do have one question, if I may, while we're waiting for Dr. Gilbert.
Sure, go ahead.
The doctor says that he has such a low cholesterol, total cholesterol. You know, I think it's 140, 150, but you can correct me. and I've been told by my doctors, that doesn't matter so much. It's the ratio of the HDL to the LDL. What is your philosophy on that?
Well, the ratio is important. Total cholesterol, again, encompasses a lot of different particle sizes. And then some people have a genetic predisposition to high levels of high-density lipoprotein. And HDL is typically considered to be protective. And that can falsely lower their ratio. And sometimes, you know, you think that they are protected when actually they may not be, because high HDL HDL is also considered to be a risk factor now, especially if the level's rising above 100. So where we used to say high HDLs, you're protected and this is not a risk factor for you, now we know that if the value is rising really high above 100, it may actually be a risk factor. So what happens is when the low density particles, especially the smaller ones, the more atherogenic ones, are lining the blood vessels and they're forming plaque buildup, the high density particles come and modify that plaque. So we like to call them good versus bad, but actually they're all related to the plaque, and one is modifying the plaque, the other one is kind of building the plaque up larger. And you don't want that plaque to become larger. So yes, absolute numbers are important. Their fractionation is even more important. And the ratio depends upon, one or two numbers, and sometimes they can give us a false level of comfort.
Okay.
And then we also send our patients in for imaging studies because we want to look at what's happening to the blood vessels too. And then personal history is very, very important. If you have a strong family history, then you're at a higher risk than somebody who doesn't have that.
Oh.
Okay.
Very interesting.
Yeah. It is fascinating, though. And you know, the thing about heart disease, as Dr. Mixon mentioned earlier, it is contributes to chronic disease and morbidity and mortality, highest killer in the United States. But we've studied it so long, we can actually manage heart disease better than we do. And sometimes we get hung up on numbers, but numbers just indicate that there's plaque. And we know that with advancing age, the plaque is building and increasing. And so we have to be very proactive in reducing your risk, no matter what the numbers are.
And to some degree, you had to remember, we're just playing the odds.
You know,
we have statistical probabilities, but probabilities apply to populations, to large groups, not to individuals.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we look at where we are, we make our best guesstimate, and then, you know, we make a decision based on what seems most reasonable to us at the time. But there is very little that is hardcore, cut and dried stuff in medicine. It's always a matter of opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we're going more and more towards personalized care, but we're still very far away from it.
From all the answers, yeah, we are.
Is it also the latest thing, too, is now to have the plaque build down in your vessels? You have to have inflammation going on in your body. And so if you really work on your diet and do things to decrease your normal inflammation, isn't that going to help?
Yeah, well, we have to work on wherever you are as an individual,
obviously.
And we're trying to, you know, to shift the odds in your favor as far as possible.
Yeah.
But we don't have firm answers. We have indications. And so, you know, we're looking at the numbers, we're looking at the probabilities, and we, you know, we're making our best guess. Looks like Dr. Gilbert is on the line.
Yes, Catherine, we've got Dr. Gilbert here, so you can ask him about your eyes and sinus. Yeah, let's see if our producer can mix the calls here.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hey.
Oh, we can, Dr. Gilbert.
Fantastic. So I heard Catherine's early symptoms, and then ironically, I got a patient call. So I missed part of it, but the part that I heard sounds like her dry eyes have been somewhat improved, but we're concerned about her nasal and sinus discomfort being related to the medication absorption. So if so there are two ducts that lead from the surface of the eye into the nasal lacrimal drainage, and therefore from there into the sinuses. So you're quite right. There is some systemic absorption to any eye medication that we administer. But if we have blocked those ducts for her severe dry eyes, then that goes away. That goes to zero. What we're not sure is really two things, because I don't have her records in front of us, whether we blocked one or both, and what technology we use to block it, because it is possible. If we permanently close it, it's gone. It should be gone forever. If we use a plug, then that is often reversible, and sometimes it can be reversed accidentally just by rubbing your eye or just time wear and tear. a temporary, even what we think of as a non-absorbing plug that should be permanent, can be temporary if the patient happens to dislodge it. So I think one of the things that we want to do, if that's even a possibility, if those drops could be causing it, and I think they can't, but even if they could, the thing to do would be to check and make sure that that punctal occlusion is still intact. And then if one or both are not, we can either permanently or temporarily block those ducts to test the theory.
All right.
Did that help at all?
Okay.
Yeah, that's a suggestion that had not occurred to us.
Very
As
good.
Always, we want to get the expert in who tells us stuff we're not thinking about.
So, that's right.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Gilbert, thank you so much for calling in. It is at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you, Catherine, for the call. And we will continue talking with our listeners. We've got Ray and Lena on the line as well. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Here's the number, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
And in my heart, you'll always stay forever young.
Turn the speaker down.
Forever young. Forever young.
Forever young. No, almost. It's not. Immortal is living forever.
Forever young.
Yeah.
Well, but it
then
didn't
you die
say,
young.
You die young. That's what everybody wants. That's what everybody wants, right?
Oh.
Die as young as possible after as many years as possible.
Right. Die. It's called die young at a very old age.
At a very old age, yes. Yeah. There you go. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. In a few weeks, you'll be able to hear us and see us talking in between all the breaks and commercial breaks. We're stretching, we're dancing, we're waving at the cameras and reloading water. You'll
yawning.
See all the behind the scenes things going on here. All right, continuing to take your calls here on Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira. I'm Lynette. Good morning. Here is that number to call. We've got room for a few more calls, 206-421-5757. We're headed to Woodinville. Ray is on the line right now. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Ray.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I have another question, too, so about that physician's list before I ask you about nattokinase. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Sure.
How would I approach a new doctor about working with my naturopathic doctor? Because I've got that list from you guys, and, you know, some of them are RNs, some are PAs, some of them are MDs.
Uh-huh.
And if I went into them, you know, and I said, how do you approach that without them being offended?
Well,
depends on the doctor, probably.
Depends on the doctor, yeah.
It's your list, so I'm figuring those people.
Yeah, there are doctors who have giant egos and want to be your one and only point of care.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are doctors more like most of us that say, you know, we want as much input as we can possibly get.
Yeah.
So since I don't know which doctor we're talking about, it's hard to tell you. But, you know, I think straightforward and honest is the best thing. And I would take in perhaps the last note from our clinic, because the note should tell you what the doctor believes your issues are and what we're treating and why we're treating it and what our plans are. And with a complete medication list, and let them know.
Uh-huh.
I'm seeing the folks at Longevity Medical Clinic. Here's the note from that doctor. You know, I just want you to know where we are and what else I'm doing. And if my personal opinion is, any doctor who is so insecure that he will not accept another doctor's participation in your care is too insecure to be in medicine.
A lot of mainstream doctors are really...
They don't know the impact that the nutrients can make on your life.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was never taught these in medical school. I didn't know them till after I graduated from medical school. And some people that do know a little bit and dibble-dabble in it, they'll be fine with it. Others won't. And then if something goes wrong, the first thing to be blamed will be the things they don't know anything about.
Yep, absolutely. If it's something they don't understand and they don't know about, that's what they'll blame all the issues on.
Yeah.
It's just the way the human beings
work. Okay, well. Yeah. Okay, well, I've got that list, and I really appreciate that you guys make that available. Hey, on nattokinase, I'm sure you're familiar with Dr. Mercola. He had an article out about nattokinase and lumbrokinase, if that's how you pronounce it. He was saying that the lumbrokinase is like 300% stronger than nattokinase. And I was wondering if you had any information on that and what those two supplements are good for.
I'm not someone that has used the kinases much at all. You know, if I'm trying to prevent a clot, I tend to use an anticoagulant that's pretty potent.
Yeah.
You know, I had a superficial thrombophlebitis in one of my legs, I now forget which one, a decade or more ago, and I decided to try the nattokinase with it, and it did no good at all. So I gave up on it pretty quickly. You know, I know people swear that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, some people do.
I haven't been personally impressed.
Right, and I don't use them either, so I couldn't tell you much. I have had one or two patients using it, and they do like it. But then, you know, I'm not opposed to them using it if it helps them. What I do tell them is to be careful about any extra blood thinning, because you have a cumulative effect with that. You know, I'm reading here that the lumbrokinase comes from earthworms and natto is from soybeans, and otherwise they're pretty much similar. So I really couldn't tell you one way or the other.
Prefer earthworm extract from soy extract.
Yes.
I have no real preference.
If you go to PubMed and type in nattokinase and I don't know the other keyword. I think it's cardiovascular disease. There's a little abstract. All the rest of it's in Chinese. The whole study is in, and it actually talks about how this study in China, and it's just a few years ago, actually reduces the thickness of the arteries where the plaque builds up on it. But the deal is I don't read Chinese, so I can't read the article. I can only read the abstract. And the abstract gives some measurements about how.
That's right. We can have after a few months.
I could have my wife read it to me, I guess.
Or daughter.
or my daughter. That's right. They both. Yeah, my.
Oh yeah.
I have about 40 characters that I can read. You know, I can.
More than me.
I can find the entrance,
anyway,
the exit, the on ramp, the speed limits, and the bathrooms.
I
don't know. The problem in medicine is that you can find a study that will support just about anything. And what we're really looking for is what is a preponderance of the evidence. But if you've only got one study, you don't have any preponderance. You don't have any differing opinions or different people from different labs looking at the same issue. And so, you know, if I see one study and all I've got is an abstract, and I can't even read the whole study to see how well I think it was done, I don't put much credence in it. It may well be true. I just don't have enough data to form a legitimate opinion.
Well, we never will.
And always read the footnotes, because you want to know who funded the study. Even in supplements, you want to know who funded it.
Yeah, but it's like you guys have said, you know, I mean, because it's a supplement, nobody's going to put money into a study. They're going to go with, like, you know, a Pixapan or Eliquist or, you know, a Warfarin, where they can make money. You know, I take, what is that? Eliquist, I take the generic version out of India through Canada, because it's like, you know, a third of the cost.
Yes.
A 60-day supply of Eliquist in our country is almost $550.
Yeah.
From India out of Canada, it's like $70. Holy cow, how does that work?
Right.
No, I agree. You know, and I don't know exactly what to do about it. We are the research center for the world, and we are the research center for the world because we spend the most on the drugs. The drug companies here have the most money available to do the research. The other countries, they don't spend much on the drugs, but that means there's no money available to do the research. It's an issue.
Yes.
And I don't have any great answers.
Ray, hold the line. We want to continue with you, but we do need to take a quick break. And then Lena will be talking with you as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Medicine with just a few minutes to go and a couple more callers to go, but we're finishing up here with Ray on the line.
Okay.
Did you get all your answers, Ray?
Yeah. Anything else we need from us, Ray?
Okay. All right.
I don't hear Ray.
I think Ray is good. Yeah. All right. So let's head to Kent now. We have Lena on the line. Hi, Lena.
Lena.
Hi.
This is different from Princess Leia, I guess.
That's right.
From Star Wars.
Ah, how can we help?
Your voice. Yes, I'd like a little bit better understanding regarding metformin. So I have several questions regarding that.
Okay.
First of all, I was wondering if the dose that a person would take is based on their current weight.
Dose with metformin is usually dose to effect and side effects. So let me start with just a little overview of what metformin is. It's an old drug, been around a long, long time. Was originally designed as a diabetes medication for type 2 diabetes. It works by making your cells more sensitive to insulin. It doesn't increase the amount of insulin you make. It just allows your cells to respond more effectively to the insulin you do make. So it improves your insulin resistance so that you are less insulin resistant. So it is a drug that we can use actually even in combination with an insulin-dependent diabetic so that they need less insulin, which is kind of useful that way. But what we've found through the decades is, well, I guess 10 or 15 years ago, somebody came up with a fascinating study. They looked at diabetics that were on metformin and compared them to people that were not diabetic, because diabetics tend to die younger. They die of heart attacks. They die of strokes. They die of kidney failure. Diabetes is a devastating metabolic disease that basically just destroys much of your body. But they found that despite the fact that diabetics tend to die quite young of a wide variety of diseases, when they put them on metformin, they didn't die as young. And in fact, they lived on average about 5 years longer than non-diabetics, which was a real shock. Because something is going on to make a diabetic on metformin better off than a non-diabetic in the first place. So we started looking at that, and it turned out it's a SIRT1 inhibitor. And so it is now being used as an anti-aging drug, even in non-diabetics. It helps to lower our weight. Most people on metformin lose some weight. They get less fat. They have better control of their insulin levels. But they also get usually better kidney function, better brain function, better prostate function. They act in many respects as though they're younger than their chronological age, which is interesting. And it turns out that sirtuin-1 inhibition that seems to be giving us these effects are the same thing that happens with rapamycin, which is another drug that is used as an anti-aging drug. Rapamycin has been found to increase 12 to 15% the lifespan of every animal we've ever tried it on, from fruit flies to earthworms to dogs to monkeys to people. Rapamycin is probably the most widely used anti-aging drug in the world, and many of us are using it in combination with metformin because rapamycin, as a side effect, tends to raise blood sugars and cholesterols. And metformin tends to lower blood sugars. So personally, I am taking both rapamycin and metformin because I want to live the longest, most joyous life I possibly can. Yeah. So among my program is those two medications. Not a diabetic, never want to be a diabetic, but I take metformin, a so-called diabetic drug anyway. Downside of metformin is it inhibits B12. It inhibits all of your B vitamin absorption. So if you're going to be on metformin, you need to also be on B vitamin supplementation and have your B vitamins checked on a regular basis to make sure you're not getting deficient. The other thing
I didn't know it was possible to check B vitamins.
Of course it is. Sure. Mm-hmm. We measure them in our patients all the time.
If you were
one of our patients, we'd be checking them about every 3 months. And we also have to look at your kidney function, because there is a very rare condition in which metformin is used in people with very poor kidney function, in which it can actually trigger lactic acidosis and kill them. So there is one disastrous potential side effect on metformin, and that is, lactic acidosis. I've never actually seen it happen, but then I've always given it to people that have decent kidney function.
And it can also cause
a delicate
gas
balance.
And bloating and diarrhea and loose stool.
I'm sorry, ma'am. What was your statement?
So it's a delicate balance.
It's a balance. It's not all that delicate. Usually what we do with metformin is we start with a low dose. 125 to 250 milligrams once a day. Then we'll go to twice a day. Then we'll raise it up to maybe 500 in the morning and 250 at night. And then we go to 500 twice a day. The most common complications, the things that make people stop using metformin, is abdominal cramping and or diarrhea. But if you start with a dose quite low and raise it slowly over time so that your body adjusts, most people can get up to 1,000 milligrams twice a day and have no side effects. But you have to start low.
What is the dosage that you're finally using after years of doing it?
Well, I'm using personally about 500 milligrams twice a day. And that's keeping me pretty much where I want to be.
Uh-huh. The reason that I'm asking this question, I started on a statin after having a blockage and having stents. And my sugar went from a resting of 100, which it was prior to any of this, and it just kept climbing, and it was up in the 300s.
Wow.
And I had told them that I chose not to go down the path of adding drug after drug after drug. Mm-hmm. And so I refused the diabetic and decided to try my best to see what I could do. Well, I wasn't having any success. And 4 years later, after all of that, about four and a half, close to five, I ended up deciding I had already cut myself down on the statin and had noticed that the sugars were going down. So now I'm in the range of 200 rather than 300. And so I'm feeling better about that. But I had avoided the metformin. And I am wondering if I should choose not to avoid the metformin and if I need really careful watching in order to, and by the way, I'm 78 in a few days.
Okay. So you and I are pretty much same age cohort, about 1 year difference. Yeah, I mean, I'd watch you closely, but, if I've got somebody that I'm worried about cardiovascular disease and it has stents and so on, the other things I would have them on is a PDE5 inhibitor and testosterone, because statin combined with a PDE5 inhibitor like
Cialis.
Yeah, Cialis and a good testosterone load appropriate for your gender, we can cut your risk of dying of heart disease by over 90%. There's some fascinating studies on using that three drug combination, statins with testosterone with a PDE5 inhibitor. And in the process, of course, we also improve the blood flow to your brain, your heart, your muscles, and we slow the growth of a wide variety of solid tumors, such as breast cancers and so on. So, you know, I tend to put men and women on that whole combination.
So if a normal doctor who had normal doctor training would agree to a metformin dose, and I started on that, would that be, being as affordability, would that be a wise choice?
Metformin is dirt cheap. It's a generic drug. It's been around for 70 or 80 years. So, you know, it's pennies a day. So I don't worry about cost on it. Unfortunately, young lady, we are right coming up on 12 o'clock and they throw us off the air.
That's right. We turn into pumpkins.
Yes.
You know, thank you for the call, and I hope we've been of some help. And if we haven't been enough, call us back early next week.
Absolutely. And Charlie, please call us back at the beginning of the show next week. We'd like to get you on the show. We'll be back live in the studio again, of course, Leading Edge Medicine. And we thank you for calling in on the show. We thank you for listening. And if you'd like to contact us and find out more information about what we do at Longevity,